This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Victoria Cash. Thanks for calling the Lucky Land Hotline. If you feel like you do the same thing every day, press 1. If you're ready to have some serious fun for the chance to redeem some serious prizes, press 2. We heard you loud and clear. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com right now and play over 100 social casino-style games for free. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is America on the Road, named best radio show by the International Automotive Media Conference, and now in its 30th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. I'm Jack Nierad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris, good to see you and good to talk with you.
Good to see you as well. We're finally enjoying some good driving weather here in Maine. How are things in Southern California?
Yeah, we have good driving weather too. I'm not doing enough driving, but I'd like to do more. I'm going to have a new car out front by the end of the show, so we'll be driving that a little bit later. A lot of interesting things to talk about, Chris. A new study predicts that robo-taxis will be big business, and I mean big business, in 10 years. There are some issues with the autonomous driving technology, however, and we'll talk about those coming up. Big report here. The all-new all-electric Acura ZDX and ZDX Type S have just rolled into dealerships across the country, and you can buy one without ever going into an Acura dealership. So we'll tell you about that, too. I'll tell you about the SUV and how Acura is going to sell it coming up. Toyota has just announced a new hydrogen headquarters, and that indicates the automaker's continuing commitment to that alternative fuel. They seem to want to stick with the hydrogen, keep pushing hydrogen, so we'll talk about that. Honda has just announced that it will plant 85,000 trees near its factory in Ohio. This isn't a new idea, but maybe it's time to take a second look at measures like this to combat carbon dioxide in the atmosphere rather than concentrating strictly on EVs. We can bat that around a little bit later in the news segment. We'll tell you more later in the show. So there's plenty of food for thought this week, right, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot to talk about, as always.
As always, we're lucky doing a talk show that there's stuff to talk about. Let's do a little business here. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com, EMLancey.com, the publisher of my latest book, Dance in the Dark, and Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at drivingtoday.com/autoinsurance. That's drivingtoday.com/auto-insurance. Please use that hyphen, otherwise it just goes nowhere. As you longtime listeners to the show know, Chris lives at one end of the country. I live at the other. Each week we get together to talk about cars, the car industry, and how you can save some money on your car. And of course, we road test a couple of vehicles. What is your road test vehicle this time around, Chris?
I had an electric vehicle this week. It's the 2024 Nissan Ariya. It's a Platinum Plus E-Force model. Can't wait to tell you all about it.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing about it. I am going to be road testing a vehicle I think we both like, the Volvo S60 Recharge. So look for that. And this week, our special guest is Tyson Jomini. He is Vice President of Data and Analytics at J.D. Power. He has a lot to say about vehicle affordability. If you're looking to buy a car anytime soon, you should listen to this interview because he has a lot to say. So a lot of show for you this week. Stay with us, and we'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nierad back with you. We're so glad you're with us on America on the Road. We do appreciate you joining us and listening to us. It means a lot to us, so thanks for doing that. News, interesting news. This is an analysis of driverless vehicle testing from the California DMV. This is done by a company that called ID Tech X. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce that, but it's ID Tech X. And they have done a report on this, looking at what the California DMV has found and then doing some analysis of it, which I think they plan to sell to industry, but also is interesting to us. And one of the things they predict is that the driverless robo-taxi industry in the United States will be a $470 billion annual business in 10 years from now, in 2034. I mean, that's a pretty bold prediction right there when the current revenue is approximately zero, I think. That's a lot of cash for robo-taxi rides. But what's your initial take on that before we dive into this a little bit more?
Well, I mean, robo-taxis have had a pretty bumpy year in 2023, even though, you know, a couple of companies did okay. I think it's really hard to look 10 years out and say how something is going to go when the current state of things, as you mentioned, is just kind of at the ground level.
Yeah, and I think they acknowledge that, too, in the analysis. But one of the things that impressed me about this, and I didn't realize how much testing has been done and is currently being done by Waymo and by Cruise in California, and this is through California Department of Motor Vehicle Information, but there's a ton of it going on. And, 3.7 million miles of driving Waymo vehicles, 438 of them are out there robo-taxis. About 1.2 million of those miles were driverless. The others were when drivers were in the vehicle, quote-unquote, monitoring the vehicle, but not driving the vehicle. And Cruise even did more than that. I mean, that's a ton of miles, isn't it? I mean, a ton of miles under the wheels.
Yeah, you know, I think that the negative sides of this get a lot of attention, but the positive, I guess, at least for the industry, is that they are doing pretty extensive testing. I mean, very extensive testing.
Yeah. Well, Cruise did over 2 million miles of testing in 2023 of driverless testing. It also ran into some problems and then ceased doing driverless testing in California, I believe. And I don't know whether they've resumed that or not. Then they have this category that I find interesting. It's called disengagements. And it's essentially when something goes wrong or when the test driver feels that the vehicle isn't doing what it should be doing or was planned to do. And last year, there were 212 disengagements from Waymo, so a lot of miles per disengagement, almost 20,000 miles, 17,000 miles per disengagement, which the analysis said isn't great. And in comparison, the average U.S. human driver is involved in a collision roughly every 200,000 miles. And now an engagement isn't necessarily a collision either, so it's not precisely analogous kind of analysis. Say that several times. Analogous analysis. And again, as you say, it's kind of the bad things that happen that might be anomalies or close to it that get all the reporting, but we don't want any of these bad things to happen, do we?
No, like you say, you know, if I get in a fender bender, that's not going to make the news. But when a Waymo taxi stops, you know, traffic in San Francisco, not only there's a lot more people in San Francisco than there are in Maine, but it makes the news, and it's something that the industry as a whole is going to have to overcome, is that public distrust.
Right. It's kind of the egregious stuff too, like driving through caution tape. There was a Cruise vehicle that just went through. Here's caution tape set up, and in theory, your typical human being would see the caution tape and stop, but apparently the vehicle couldn't, quote unquote, see it. So didn't, and then drove into a telephone pole that had tumbled down, and that's why the caution tape was up. You know, that kind of thing may be an anomaly, maybe not. You know, maybe a human would not have done that. You had an accident with a vehicle where two vehicles came together, and then a pedestrian who was hit by a human-driven vehicle is then struck and dragged by an autonomous vehicle, by the Cruise vehicle. It just shows you there's a million things that can happen, you know, to humans and to machines.
Yeah, and, you know, it's surprising that humans are pretty good, I mean, in general, at controlling and driving cars with all the complicated computations that have to happen in our brains. It just goes to show how you know, intense the technology has to be to even get close to a human to not hit other people and cars and, as you point out, telephone poles.
Yeah. I mean, robo-taxis are operating in a certain environment, but we'll have to see about that. Well, I want to get to other news, too. This I want to comment on the Acura ZDX going into dealerships. It's pricing will be about $65,000, and then you can get a $7,500 federal tax credit, and they will all qualify for this tax credit. The unsaid thing in their release about this, of course, is a vehicle built by General Motors that has the General Motors Ultium battery in it. But they're very excited to come to market with this. And I think one of the most interesting things to me, beyond a pretty good range, 313 miles of range, is the fact that you can buy one without going to an Acura dealer. I mean, what's your overall take on ZDX and where that's going to go?
Yeah, you know, just as an aside, I have bought the last two cars I purchased completely remotely and had them either delivered or picked up, you know, at the dealership without any interactions there. I appreciate that experience. I'm sure a lot of younger people, especially those that are buying EVs, will appreciate it. The ZDX as a whole, you know, that and the related Honda Prologue, they're both great looking EVs. And GM's Ultium technology, despite some of the bumps that it has had getting its own vehicles out the door, it's a pretty impressive platform.
Yeah, it is a very impressive platform. In fact, this is the most powerful Acura ever, the ZDX Type S, which is interesting because the NSX was out there, right? I mean, supercar. But this GM-built vehicle is the most powerful Acura ever built. So that's kind of a mind blower right there.
Yeah, and instant torque, I bet it's going to feel pretty quick.
Yeah, well, I look forward to driving that. It's also interesting that Acura is able to deliver some of these when Cadillac is having difficulty delivering Lyric, and Chevrolet even more difficulty delivering Blazer EV, and they're all built on the same platform. Well, I want to get to this too. Toyota has created its hydrogen headquarters. What's your take on hydrogen going forward? It's kind of interesting that they're still emphasizing hydrogen at the same time they've invested more in electric vehicles, and they've announced that recently. They're just kind of hedging all bets, I guess. I mean, your take?
Yeah, I mean, hydrogen is much more developed as a fuel source or a type, I guess, in Europe and other places than it is here. Personally, I kind of wish it had taken off a little bit more. You know, you get the benefits of an EV with the quick fueling times of a gas vehicle, and you know, kind of some of the best of both worlds. However, you know, we have two models on sale here in the U.S. Maybe one. I don't know if Hyundai still sells theirs, but you know, we talked about this before. You can only fuel it up at a couple of places, and they're all in California, both in California.
And one of the untold stories here is the hydrogen prices, I think, are skyrocketing, and it's becoming much more expensive if you were paying for hydrogen to fuel your vehicle. And that doesn't seem like it's going to cease anytime soon, because I don't think the hydrogen for vehicles, the production of hydrogen for vehicles, is keeping up with the pace of even those few vehicles being introduced into the marketplace. So there's a lot to like about hydrogen, and you identified exactly the number one thing. You can fill up your car with hydrogen just like filling up with gas, essentially pretty close to it, that quickly, and then get that kind of range and essentially emission-free or only water vapor kind of emissions from it. But interesting kind of stuff. What is your quick take on this planting of trees thing? Should we be revisiting this kind of thing to mitigate carbon, especially when the adoption of electric vehicles universally seems very dim at best?
Yeah, I mean, I have no doubt that this will help remove carbon from the atmosphere. Trees do that. That's not a secret at all. But, you know, Honda, Subaru, a bunch of others have tried similar efforts like this. I think it's, you know, absolutely a PR exercise. It definitely helps their image, especially since they're doing it around their headquarters. You know, it helps them advertise a more green campus and things like that. I don't know. I think, you know, it's definitely not a negative move, but I don't see this making any large strides in reducing overall emissions or carbon.
Yeah, hard to say, I guess. I mean,
yeah.
Interesting byproduct here is maple trees producing maple syrup that you could then will be sold at, I'm told, will be sold at farmers markets nearby. You know, how green can you get, right? I mean, that's a Birkenstock kind of piece of PR right there, huh?
Well, Volkswagen sells sausages, right? Yeah. So why don't Honda sell maple syrup? But yeah, it won't be as good as it is here in Maine, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that Maine maple syrup is the best. I endorse that 100%. And when we come back, we will have a couple of road test vehicles that are very, very cool. So stay with us for that, and we will be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. It is road test time, and we have some fascinating vehicles, some really interesting vehicles to talk about, with electric propulsion in both. One is all electric, the one you were driving, Chris, the Nissan Ariya. I always look at the how that's spelled and almost mispronounce it, but I think Ariya is the way to do it. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's really easy to say Ariya or any other variation on that. But yeah. I tested the 2024 Nissan Ariya. This was the Platinum Plus E-Force. Force is spelled with a 4 instead of an F, just for reference there. This is the range-topping model. Mine had the 20-inch wheels and all the good stuff. But if you take a step back, you can get into this thing for around $41,000. This is like the base rear-wheel drive model. And to, just to note, some of the lower configurations have longer range estimates than the model that I tested. But mine was almost $62,000, and that includes destination and options, not taxes. So there's quite a spread on the pricing here. And Jack, I know you drove this a little while ago. What were your thoughts just initially on the Ariya and some of how it drives and looks?
Actually, what jumped out at me was how much I like the interior. I think it's got a really, really cool interior. I think it's very inventive, pretty functional. I mean, there's some things you have to learn, certainly. But I think it got really a beautiful interior. The driving experience seemed kind of electric car generic. It didn't seem either particularly special or but it wasn't bad, certainly. So, I mean, that's kind of my overall take.
Yeah, I agree. I think the interior is a high point here. But if we go back to just the powertrains here. So this range-topping model is a dual electric motor model. It's all-wheel drive. It's got 389 horsepower, 442 pound-feet of torque, and 257 miles of range. On a DC fast charger, you can go from 10 to 80% battery in about 40 minutes. However, we have none of those where I live, so I will never know if it actually achieves that speed or not. I'm stuck charging at like 50 kilowatts, so poo-poo on main for that. But, you know, 389 horsepower, Jack, as you mentioned, there's nothing really exciting about the driving experience here, but it's quick enough. It's very quiet. It's pretty refined. I think, you know, in everyday driving, you feel isolated. You feel somewhat luxurious. You know, you don't have all the bumps and bangs that you get in maybe a Tesla or even like a Ford Mustang Mach-E as you're driving around. And the ride quality is pretty good, although you do feel the weight of the battery underneath you at all times. And this is something we talk about with EVs a lot. Even though it's got a great center of gravity with that low battery, you do feel a little bit more of the road imperfections just because there's that extra weight underneath. The styling here is very futuristic. You know, the front end has large, I'm waving my hands on camera here so the radio can't see it, but large LED running lights, a closed off front end since it doesn't need an air intake for a motor. And I really like the look of this. It's, you know, smallish crossover, two rows. So nothing really outlandish with the styling. So I think Nissan did a good job keeping it kind of middle of the road. This range-topping model has 20-inch wheels. You can get it with smaller wheels, again, that increase the range. But I want to spend more time on the interior because, you know, while most models get, they call it leatherette, which is synthetic leather, the range-topping model, I keep saying that term, but the Platinum model comes with Nappa leather. Some of them have like the bronze-colored interior. Mine was a blue exterior with a navy blue interior and navy, I'm going to call it Alcantara, which is like a synthetic suede on the dash and the door panels. Really, really gorgeous interior. I can't say enough about how great it looks. Everything, however, is touch-based controls, so all of your climate controls. There's a power sliding center console, a power opening storage unit in the dash. All that is touch-based, and there's not really a lot of feedback, and it's not always the most responsive. It's actually quite annoying at times. I think while some of those features are really cool, I would like to have some physical buttons, but I think we're kind of past that in terms of how the future is going. You get 12.3-inch digital gauge cluster, very nice display. Everything is well lit. It's easy to see. There's never any doubt about what's going on with the vehicle, your range, your speed, temperature, time, all that's right there. You get a 12.3-inch touchscreen with wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. The top Platinum model's got a 10-speaker Bose audio system. You get Bluetooth. All the things that you would expect in a $62,000 vehicle are there. I will say that for, you know, such a high-end vehicle, 10 speakers sounds a little light, and it is. The Bose sounds good, but it's a little weak in terms of what you get out of something like maybe the Mazda Bose system, or even, you know, if we go a little bit higher to Lincoln, you know, some of those brands that cost about the same, those stereos sound a lot better. Interior space is great in this vehicle. The front seats are very spacious. You know, I never, at 6 feet tall and 200 and I'm not going to go into how much I weigh, but 200 some odd pounds. Never really missed any front seat space. Both of my kids could ride in the back. We stopped at piano practice for my older daughter yesterday, and my young daughter had enough room in the back floorboard to play Hot Wheels cars and have her iPad and everything right there. And, you know, I didn't have to move my seat at all. So I think if you have four, maybe even five people, you'd have plenty of space here. My dog rides in the back, way back, just fine. Absolutely no issues there in the front seat when I latch him in with his car carrier, no problems. Nissan adds a whole suite of safety features to this top model. You get blind spot monitoring. You get the ProPilot Assist system, which is adaptive cruise control with lane centering. And everything works as expected. There are no, you know, scary dings or bongs as you're driving along. So, you know, I think overall, I like this vehicle. I think, you know, they had some delays out of the gate, which would, if it had landed on time, it would have been much more competitive than it is now. And we talked about this when you reviewed it. But overall, it's a refined package. The interior looks great. It's comfortable. I think the price is a little steep, but if you like Nissan, there's absolutely nothing wrong here.
Absolutely. I mean, this to me is in some ways just emblematic of what's going on in the electric vehicle space, right? I mean, it doesn't jump out at you as being terrific, and it doesn't, and there's certainly nothing wrong with it. There's a lot right with it. You can complain about range, and the range is about average for these vehicles. It's not either great or charge time, poorer than some, better than a few others, all of that stuff. It's the kind of stuff that's really not resonating in the marketplace, unfortunately, for a lot of people. I mean, you're talking about a fairly small vehicle at $65,000 that in a lot of ways isn't as functional day-to-day as a gasoline-powered vehicle, and that's the rub. And it's not the fault of the Aria. It's kind of the fault of the whole class right now.
Yeah, I agree.
It's difficult. Well, I was driving a vehicle, I think we can, and I don't want to say negative things about the Aria. I think it's a nice vehicle, and I you know, love the interior. But here's a vehicle I think we can say even nicer things about. It's the Volvo S60 Recharge. And I think because there's more to this vehicle than meets the eye. I mean, it kind of looks like a fairly unassuming, attractive, but doesn't jump out at you as a performance European sedan. But then it's got this kind of amazingly potent plug-in hybrid powertrain, and it's one of the fastest and maybe the fastest Volvo ever, certainly one of the fastest. And it's got a pretty good supply of all-electric range. It has a stylish a Volvo-type interior. I think both Chris Teague and I like Volvo interiors very much. And just feels good. I think in a lot of ways it's a hidden gem. I mean, it kind of gives you the feeling, and I wrote this one time, and I kind of like the line, so I'm going to use it here. It gives you the feeling that Clark Kent has, knowing he can become Superman by just changing his clothes, right? I mean, all you have to do is kind of get in the throttle in this thing, and all of a sudden you've got almost a supercar here with a pretty nice suspension, with good cornering, good ride quality. So this is kind of a hot car that doesn't look that hot, which to me makes it even hotter. What's your take?
Yeah, I agree. You know, Volvo, you can blame them for, you know, steering away from the five-cylinder engines and the things that they had in the past with the performance models. But the truth is, this car is shockingly quick, and so is the S90 with the same powertrain. I think anything with that powertrain, and it feels amazingly quick. You know, we can get it. You'll probably get into the complexity of it here in a minute, but yeah, it's more than quick enough.
Yeah, I mean, 455 horsepower and an amazing amount of torque, 523 pound-feet of peak torque. I mean, that torque is boom. I mean, you just feel that whenever you dip into the throttle. 0 to 60 in 4.1 seconds. Gee, that's like an electric car. It's almost as fast as electric. It's just a nice all-around vehicle. It's 74 MPG equivalent, according to the EPA. So that's reasonably, it's not stellar, but not so bad. What is maybe much better is its battery electric range, which is 41 miles. So you can drive this on all electric. I mean, might be able to do a couple days worth of errands just driving around on electricity with never using any gasoline at all. And then, of course, you have a really nice interior. I mean, I love Volvo interiors. I love Volvo seats, number one. I think Volvo seats are among the most supportive, most comfortable. They're certainly well-engineered. They're not designed so much for looks as they are for comfort, and I think they kind of deliver both, but they're super comfortable. This isn't an interior that has a lot of gewgaws in it, a lot of ostentation in it, but I like that. I think if you could complain about anything about the S60 Recharge. Its trunk space, 11.6 cubic feet of trunk space, isn't a whole lot, but it's kind of the norm for that class. I'm not quite sure why those vehicles have such small trunks, but you know, what's your take overall on this thing?
Yeah, you know, the interior, we own an XC90. We're now 3 years into owning it almost. And the front seats in that car, even the second row seats, are among the most comfortable in any vehicle I've ever experienced. I think Volvo has struggled with some packaging issues when they're jamming batteries into these things and they lose some trunk space. That happened with the C40 and XC40 Recharge when they retrofitted that for electrical use or electricity. So, you know, other than the trunk and maybe some other things, like you say, I think it's, you know, I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I had the ultimate trim in E all-wheel drive and dark. You know, do you like dark chocolate? I love dark chocolate. And this kind of gave me the sense of dark chocolate. It has nothing to do with dark chocolate. I love them. It has a starting price of close to $60,000, $58,595. It has a 14-speaker Harman Kardon audio system that really booms out. So, like that, memory settings in the passenger seats and all that kind of stuff. It also has a driver's seat cushion extension. So if you have long thighs or would like to, no, it won't extend your thighs, but it supports your thighs really well. And this is just such a sweetheart of a vehicle. I mean, it's not a big vehicle and it costs $60,000, but you can use it in all electric mode. You have no range issues whatsoever. It looks great inside and out. I mean, this is one of my favorites out there.
I agree.
Very, very nice vehicle. Well, when we come back, we will have an interview with our special guest, who is Tyson Jomini. He's Vice President of Data and Analytics at J.D. Power. And if you're about to buy a car, thinking about buying a car, truck, SUV, he's got a lot of great information for you. So stay with us for that, and we'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Hi, this is Jack Nierad, host of America on the Road. I'd like to tell you about my latest book, Dance in the Dark. It's a crime novel inspired by true crime. Many people have told me it is the perfect follow-up to Fatal Photographs, my true crime account of the notorious Hollywood bathing suit model murder case. In Dance in the Dark, Jason Griffiths is a rock and roll drummer turned computer programmer who fears for his life, but he doesn't know why. After living a quiet life for years, suddenly his girlfriend leaves him. He meets the most beautiful woman he has ever seen, and within days, he's wanted for the murder of a drug cartel enforcer, a murder he didn't commit. The cops think he did it, though, and so does the boss of the cartel, so he's stuck between the law and the mob with nowhere to turn. The only person who might be able to help him is the new woman in his life. But will his stunning new companion be an asset or an enemy? And can he escape the desperate situation he's trapped in? Dance in the Dark is available in paperback and as a Kindle ebook at Amazon and at E.M. Lancey Publishers. Right now, it's at a special low price that will save you $5. That's Dance in the Dark by Jack R. Nierad. Thanks for checking it out. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. It's Jack Nierad back with you. We have a terrific guest for you, a very knowledgeable guy about the auto industry. Tyson Jomini of J.D. Power is with us. Tyson, thanks so much for talking to us about what's going on in pricing trends and affordability. It's an exciting time, isn't it?
Yeah. Thanks for having me back, Jack. Good to chat with you again.
So I think we're supposed to talk about incentives and what's going on with pricing, affordability, all of that stuff. Do you have any overarching thoughts about that, Tyson?
Yeah, not great. So I would say it really would just depend on the view. I mean, to, you know, talking to consumers, who I assume, you know, the people that are listening to the show are consumers. It's very quickly becoming a much better time to buy a vehicle. I mean, what we're seeing is that incentives are coming back to, almost 6% right now of MSRP, which means about $3,000 average incentive per vehicle. But you know, I think the most important thing is that it's not symmetrical. You know, it's very asymmetrical, which means some automakers have a lot of inventory and others have still very, very little. So depending on what brand, what segment consumers are interested in, they could find a radically different, you know, market environment for incentives, transaction prices, and dealers dealing, and on and on.
Is it equally asymmetrical by segment as by manufacturer? Or is it mostly manufacturer? Some manufacturers have a lot more inventory than others.
Well, I mean, in this case, one follows the other, because where we're seeing a lot of the inventory build is in large pickups, and therefore the large pickup manufacturers tend to be from Detroit more than anywhere else. So, so in that regard, we're seeing inventory build at automakers very closely aligned with the full size truck market. At the other end, I would say the Asian brands, and you know, there's a dozen or so of those, on average, have very little inventory, and that's where we would find some of the more aggressive pricing still in place in the industry, fewer incentives and fewer dealer discounts from those Asian brands.
Is that driven largely by fuel prices? Is that why we're seeing a slowdown in full-size pickup trucks, or is there another reason?
Well, I mean, the inventory has built, so I guess in some capacity, sales are not following what the plan was or the expectation was a few months ago. I don't necessarily think that it is so much the fuel prices. It's a fairly recent story, and I think it's something that we definitely need to watch here over the next several weeks, particularly with the events in the Middle East going on as we're talking. So I think that will be an interesting story to keep an eye on. But in general, I just think automakers built too many of those too quickly, and the transaction price increases on those has been pretty dramatic. At the same time, you know, we did lose from the market the Ram 1500 Classic, and it held an important place in the market, which was to hold down the lowest end of full-size trucks. So without that entry-level vehicle there, you know, the step up now is greater for everyone. So it, you know, we not only have taken pure pricing, but we've also eliminated basically the cheapest full-size truck you could get, which has also therefore increased the prices of full-size trucks.
Do you have a thought about what the average or median price is? I know those are two different things. For full-size trucks, it strikes me it's probably around $50,000, maybe more.
So right now, I mean, heavy duties here in 2024 are $75,000 each. Light duties, $56,200 for a light-duty full-size pickup here in 2024.
So that's your average price, the average transaction.
It is. But compared to a year ago, that's up almost $4,000. So like I'm saying, everyone has been taking price gains, whether it's the MSRP, and even as incentives have gone up in the space, you know, what we're seeing is the price actions and, again, that elimination of the low end of the market are working together to increase the price. I mean, $4,000 higher in just a year, and that, you know, builds on price changes we've taken, you know, in previous years, which were also, you know, pretty substantial. Right now, the average pickup truck buyer gets about $5,500 of incentives, and that's up $3,000 from a year ago. So this gain I'm talking about is even net of that increase. Mm-hmm. To give you an idea of the scope of what we're talking about, you know, $6,000-$7,000 price increase on a year-over-year basis in this segment. And now we've got inventory, right? All the pieces kind of work together here pretty well.
Right. Do you think that we're going to see some lower priced full size trucks that one manufacturer or another is going to kind of slide into there? I mean, we've seen lower prices on the Lightning. You know, there's now obviously that's not a high volume portion of this marketplace. But, you know, what's your overall take more on the conventional side?
We now have a fully functioning mid-sized truck market here. The mid truck, you know, even 5 years ago when we had all the players there, we had an ancient Tacoma. We had a Ranger that was new to the U.S., but otherwise was a very dated product from the rest of the world, even though the Chevy Colorado wasn't too old. But now you fast forward to today.
Yeah, I mean, Frontier was 12 years old or something like that, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, we had all these mid-sized trucks, but the segment was so ancient. Even if, again, vehicles like Ranger were new to the U.S., it was an old truck the day it arrived. Now you fast forward to today, and we've got a new Tacoma arriving shortly. The Colorado's been thoroughly updated. The Ranger's all new. The Frontier's been updated. I mean, so now all of a sudden everything is new, right? So there's not that much of a need for full-size trucks to cover both spaces price-wise because we have a fully functioning mid-truck market. So I don't expect there really to be a push like, hey, let's get that, you know, regular cab, two-door, you know, Ford XL, white work truck out the door more than a fully loaded, you know, Lariat or, you know, something above that. Even let's still build those those crew cab, quad cab trucks with four-wheel drive and all the goodies, and keep those prices high. So I don't really expect there to be much of a change there. But again, the loss of the Ram Classic 1500 is, I think it's really being felt, because that's where it was. But again, now we have so many mid-sized trucks that are basically in that same space.
And I guess there's some substitution, right? I mean, a lot of people would say, well, I'm just not going to buy a mid-sized truck. I'm a full-sized truck guy. But I guess there is some substitution now and some logical reasons to do that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a full-sized truck guy, what are you looking at right now? You know, you're going to see about 30% of those buyers are paying $1,000 a month or more for those trucks. I mean, I don't know about you, Jack, but, you know, my first mortgage was less than that. So, I mean, we're talking about housing price payments here from just 20, 25 years ago in the full-size truck market. So if you want to stay there, that's great. I mean, full-size trucks can do things that other segments can't. If you have a need to tow, you have a lot of power sports and horses and fun activities you want to pursue, nothing beats a full-size truck. However, you're gonna pay for that right now.
Anything more you want to say about that? Maybe we can skip over to some other segments, some high volume segments, and talk about those as well.
Let's jump over to something else.
You want to talk about SUVs? I mean, where are we in terms of SUVs and crossovers? Obviously, that's high volume.
So right now, if you're a consumer, the things you're most likely to find in the industry will be midsize SUVs. So any of the larger 2 and 3 row crossovers. Nothing Tahoe size, but Highlander, Grand Highlander, Palisade and Telluride, and then down to what we would call our compact SUV segment, which would be like CRV, RAV4, Escape, others in that. You're most likely to find those two vehicles if you go to a dealership right now. Those are leading the way in inventory. So you go there, both of them have currently about just shy of 300,000 units on the ground. So they're the number one and two segments out there for vehicles. And shouldn't surprise, they're also the number one and two selling segments in the industry as well. Compact SUV remains number one. Midsize SUV is number two. So you see a lot of those, but the inventory is growing pretty rapidly. Again, we're just about 275, 280. Well, a year ago, we had 200,000 on the ground in both of these segments. So the inventory's grown almost 50% in a year. And so not surprising, you know, consumers for that space will also find a lot of very attractive incentive offers on those vehicles. You know, we're talking for like a midsize SUV. We would be looking at something in the range of a little bit over $3,000 for incentive spend in that space. I mean, $2,900 incentive spend. And if you're looking at like a CRV or smaller, it's a little bit less extreme for those segments. We're talking again, right around $3,000. I mean, the numbers are really close to each other. So there's a lot of incentives out there, and we're talking about much cheaper vehicles than we were just talking about with large pickups. I mean, these are some vehicles that you can get between $40,000 and $60,000 in this segment all day long. And so you can talk about some pretty good incentive levels there. So again, we're seeing a lot of vehicles built, not surprising, because those are the biggest segments in the industry. And so as a consumer, if you're out looking this weekend to find a car, you're very likely to find, you know, something in the space.
Yeah.
One of the comments I made at the beginning, though, which is that the Asian automakers remain very tight with inventory. So Honda, Hyundai, Kia, and others that are coming from Asian countries, you're going to find that those vehicles still are very scarce. And in particular, if you're looking for like a RAV4 hybrid or a CRV hybrid, those are going to be very difficult to find right now at dealerships.
What's the pricing look like? I mean, I'm testing some compact SUVs with stickers of $45,000, $47,000, something like that. I mean, that strikes me as a lot of money for a compact SUV that typically was transacting probably in the high 20s or low 30s not that long ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, right now, the average transaction price for a compact SUV. Now, Jack, when you get to test vehicles, they send you the fully loaded,
of course,
you know,
they do. Yeah.
Top shelf ones. I mean, highest trim, all the options, because you got to evaluate. You know, you have to see everything that's there. Now, the average consumer, though, is paying just shy of $36,000 right now for a compact SUV. But again, as mentioned, inventory is building so quickly. That's actually down $2,200 from last year. So we are seeing more aggressive prices in that space. I mean, again, as mentioned, there's so many of those on the ground. You should expect to find a good deal. I mean, we were just talking about mid-size SUVs. Those are about $45,000 on average, and that's down about $500 from a year ago. So we are starting to see some more aggressive prices in the places where inventory is growing. You know, but again, as mentioned, you know, multiple times already, you know, be careful of the averages here. You know, if you're looking for something from the domestics or potentially even, you know, some of the German or other imports, you'll probably find some good deals right now. But if you're looking for an Asian brand, expect to pay a little bit more than what we're talking about.
What's your advice? I'm just kind of curious as your personal opinion. Is it logic? Does it make sense to substitute a domestic for an import brand from all the quality and satisfaction reasons that we might look at? It strikes me that maybe domestics are undervalued.
Yeah, I think there's a case to be made that you could substitute a domestic brand these days. You know, in particular, GM does very well in J.D. Power quality surveys. For the most part, you can substitute those kinds of brands. What we find in the J.D. Power data, though, is that a lot of consumers, they don't trade off within their own segment. So if you own a Chevy Equinox, you're not really likely to end up with a Ford Escape. It seems kind of strange, but if you go back to that segment, so if you own a compact SUV and you want another compact SUV, your loyalty to your brand in most cases exceeds about 80%. Consumers are very, very loyal when they go back to the same segment. But once a consumer leaves the segment, so if you have an Equinox and you need now a three-row vehicle, those consumers are still fairly loyal to Chevy and to their brands in general, no matter, you know, what we're talking about, probably in the range of about 50% loyalty. But relative to, you know, when you stay in the segment, consumers are much more free agents when they leave their segment. So what I see is, you know, if you can't really find a deal on the brand or on the exact model you have, consumers generally say, I'll just pay the higher price and go back and get the same vehicle again that I had. But if I leave the segment, then it's game on and anyone can really get a piece of it. And honestly, my advice to consumers is, you know, be open-minded because the brand images have changed so much.
And when we come back, we'll have more with our special guest, Tyson Jomini, Vice President of Data and Analytics at J.D. Power. So stay with us for that, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to America on the Road with co-host Chris Tevis and Jackie Redback with you. And we're in the midst of our interview with Tyson Jomini, who's Vice President of Data and Analytics at J.D. Power. So let's continue with Tyson right now. What is the building up of inventory telling us? I mean, when we were very supply constrained, there was the thought, oh, maybe the car manufacturers have learned their lesson now, and you know, this is the way to go. You know, keep supply down, control supply. Try to avoid incentives if you can. It strikes me that we're just going back to what we were doing pre-COVID. Am I wrong?
It definitely feels like all those pledges we made during COVID, we're not really living up to that. Hey, let's be honest. You know, I made a lot of you know, health and exercise pledges during COVID that maybe I'm not living up to. So you know, we all thought this could be a different time, and we saw that with very constrained inventory. That it could be a much more profitable industry for everyone. But that was kind of a unique time and place where nobody had inventory. So if you're an automaker now, though, and you don't want to play the game, it's a tough road to go. So if you're you know, you say, okay, I'm an automaker and I'm only going to build to order. I'm not going to flood my dealers with inventory. I'm going to control everything. And a consumer is looking for, say, a full-size truck, and they're at your lot and they're being told you're going to pay full price and wait 8 or 12 weeks, and they look across the street and see, you know, all the balloons and the wavy men across the street with a whole lot full of pickup trucks with, you know, $5,000-$6,000 of incentives that they can drive home today. It's extremely hard to compete in that environment. So most automakers have found that it's really not possible to maintain those promises or those ideas that were came up with back during the supply chain crisis. Today we're building more vehicles than we're selling, and that's why inventory is building. As mentioned, you know, some of these segments we're still taking massive price increases, and that's really where we're seeing inventory build. But in general, I would think the chief challenge for the industry remains affordability. I mean, we have not only built more expensive vehicles, but at the same time, interest rates have really gone through the nose. And so consumers are finding their monthly payments are taking off. Pre-COVID, the average new car payment was just over $500 a month. Now it's closer to $750 a month. And if you only have $500 to spend on a vehicle in a month, you're a used buyer now in the span of just, you know, 4 years. So things have changed very radically. And that affordability is keeping out a lot of consumers, particularly young consumers and those whose credit isn't perfect. It's you're ending up with some interest rates. I mean, you could be seeing double digit interest rates on a car loan. And so the affordability is really holding back the industry right now.
And that was our interview with Tyson Jomini, Vice President of Data and Analytics at J.D. Power. Really insightful information on what's going on in the car market right now. And our thanks to Tyson for joining us. I'll tell you, Chris, it's been a wacky week, a lot going on. The Acura ZDX is out there, Honda's planting trees, and Toyota's doing hydrogen. What's your overall?
Yeah, let's see how many of us are riding in robo-taxis in a couple of years. But yeah, it's a very eventful week.
Yeah, $470 billion in robo-taxi rides. Wow.
That's steep.
Yeah. Well, anyway, before we go, I'd like to mention my newest book, Dance in the Dark. It's a crime thriller inspired by true crime, which I write about as well. It's available from Amazon in both ebook and paperback form, so you want to look for that. If you like our show, please pass it on. Listen to it on this radio station each week. Let your friends know, your folks know too, when you hear America on the Road, when you listen to it, and you can pass along a podcast. Can you not, Chris?
You sure can. It's very easy. A quick Google search will take you to the America on the Road podcast, where you can find us on all the major platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and so on. Like us, download us, follow us, leave us a review. All that will help us out, and you can take us with you wherever you go.
Yeah. Leave us a nice review if you would. If you hate us, then maybe you know, keep it to yourself. But hopefully, if you listen this long, you don't hate America on the Road. Thanks to our Sports Byline Network stations for carrying America on the Road. And most of all, thanks to you for listening. We know you have a lot of choices of what to listen to these days. Maybe more choices than ever, that is for certain. So we are honored by the fact that you listen to America on the Road. And please join us right here next time for another edition of America on the Road. Inner peace, self-respect, emotional fulfillment. Are you finding these worthwhile goals difficult to achieve? Are you looking for success and satisfaction in your job but not finding it? Are you thinking about starting a business but don't know what will set it apart from all the others? You can continue to struggle on your own, or you can unleash the undeniable power of the GR Factor. I'm Jack Arnierad, host of America on the Road. For years, I've found success in business and in my personal life by using the concepts I outline clearly in my book, The GR Factor. Your best self is inside you right now, just waiting to be unleashed. Inspiring all that is the best in you, the GR Factor will guide your journey, elevate your game, recast your relationships, and transform your daily life. If you want to change your life for the better, read The GR Factor. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at emlancey.com. That's The GR Factor by Jack Arnierad. Thanks for checking it out.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.